Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Tuesday, March 23rd, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people and using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever discovered in my over 46 years of doing therapy. These tools are gratefully available absolutely free due to the tireless efforts of Michael and Jeannie Rice. And the website for that is whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the red and white bullseye or the link in the upper left-hand corner of most pages that says Start Here, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book provides a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I'm using consistently throughout my life the past 16 years to improve the quality of my life, to manage my emotions, and turn any negative emotion into a very useful part of that infallible guidance system that each of us has. So you can download the actual worksheet process itself. You can download the PDF file, print it off and use it as often as you'd like. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process. They serve as a tutorial for how to use that tool in your life. And you can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and get access to the completely free and private app that contains a copy of that reality management worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we encourage people to do that soon and often because it often stirs up questions, comments, and then we ask them to call us at 563-999-3581. If you call us at that number, and you can listen to the show on hold, or you can press 1, it'll put a question mark by your phone number, and it'll announce you by your area code, and we can have a conversation. We have made the commitment this year to be working through the Course in Miracles lessons, today being the 82nd day of the year, Lesson 82 in the Course in Miracles workbook is a review. It's a review of Lesson 63, which says, the light of the world brings peace to every mind through my forgiveness. My forgiveness is the means by which the light of the world finds expression through me. Forgiveness is the means by which I become aware of the light of the world in me. So we should review here that the word forgiveness as we're using it and the word forgiveness as A Course in Miracles and the Way of Mastery uses it is about a removal tool, a tool that removes everything that's unlike love, everything that's unlike this light of the world that you're made of, and lets that light shine brightly, lets you see it, lets other people see it, This isn't about pardoning someone for something horrible they did. This is about applying a tool, the tool of forgiveness, the tool of removal for everything that's unlike love from your system, which makes it so you can see, feel, and experience your true nature as the light of the world, and others can see and feel and experience your true nature and theirs. So my forgiveness is the means by which the world is healed together with myself. Let me then forgive the world or remove everything that's unlike the truth of the world from my awareness, that it may be healed along with me. Specific suggestions of the form of this for today are, let peace extend from my mind to yours, and then name a particular person. I share the light of the world with you, and then name a particular person. Through my forgiveness, I can see this as it is. Also in today's review is a review of Lesson 64. Let me not forget my function. I would not forget my function because I would remember my true self. I cannot fulfill my function if I forget my true self, my true nature, as this energy of creation expressing and extending in form. Suitable specific forms of this idea include, let me not use this, whatever's happening in front of me, to hide my function from me. I would use this, whatever's happening in this moment, as an opportunity to fulfill my function, to shine the light of awareness, the light of creation in this moment. This, whatever's happening in this moment, may seem to threaten my ego, but it cannot change my function in any way. We've also agreed to work with Pam Grout's book, A Course in Miracles Experiment. Lesson 82, she titles, Hallelujah Anyway. She quotes Rebecca Solnit as saying, memory of joy and liberation can become a navigational tool, an identity, a gift. From the need to know category, when I let go of everything I believe, perfect days unfurl before me. And the song recommended is Walking on Sunshine by Katrina and the Waves. But it's just so unfair. It's a cinch to be grateful when the sails of life are blowing your way. But what about when those times when things appear to not be working out? My tack is to say, hallelujah, anyway. My friend Gail told me about a girls' outing. One of the friends of the day woke to find her daughter running a fever. She called Gail whimpering about her bad luck. Gail responded the way she responds to everything. That's fabulous. No, you didn't hear me, her girlfriend said. I'm not going to be able to go today. And Gail said, that's fabulous. Gail reminded her that she'd been needing some free time to sift through paperwork and that this so-called setback provided the perfect opportunity. Her friend thanked Gail for the reminder, and not only did she end up having a delightful day with her daughter, but they, while cruising the internet, they came across the very house she'd been lusting after for 3 years. This dream house was way more than she could afford, but on this day, while dealing with the disappointment of thwarted plans, she saw that, quote, her house, close quote, had gone into foreclosure and was selling for one quarter of the price. As Gail said, quote, she now has a contract on her dream home, close quotes. So when the day seems to be going in a direction other than or perhaps even exactly opposite to the way you had planned, Pam Grout suggests shouting out, hallelujah anyway. So our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and we have 50 full minutes to have a conversation, to embrace your questions and engage in a discussion. Whether it's about something in today's lesson from Course in Miracles or something from a previous show. We've had a few of them. We've had 10 years of five days a week, 1 hour a day. 8 years of that, and then two more years of 5 days a week, 2 hours a day. So if there is something that you might want to have us focus on as a topic or some question you have about the work or about what's going on in your life these days, our friend Susan sent me something from Pam Grout. Pam Grout, as an author, also does posts on a WordPress blog. And the writing is about how Anthony Hopkins has an attitude that he uses to look at the world that is right in line with Pam Grout's work, Course in Miracles, Way of Mastery, etc. At the top of the blog post, she quotes Anthony Hopkins, who says, "I do believe more than ever that there is a vast area of our own lives that we know nothing about. So she writes, "So the headline for this post comes from the great Sir Anthony Hopkins. Only in this version, he longs to be a little boy. He even carries a photo of his four-year-old self on his phone that he often looks at, and he says to the photo, 'We did good, kid. We did good.'" As you may have heard, the 83-year-old actor was recently nominated for an Oscar yet again for his role in The Father. "I was intrigued after reading a recent article in The New Yorker where, when he was asked about memorizing so many lines, he mentioned that he tells himself, 'I've got a perfect memory.' He said it's a form of self-hypnosis and that he's very careful with what he says to himself about himself. While he doesn't tout the law of attraction, Hopkins is a longtime devotee of what he calls intentionality. That's why he repeats an affirmation every morning. I am alive. I am well. I am filled with perfect and abundant life." He quotes, "We are the direct products of everything we've ever thought. Even the most insignificant thought can change your life, for better or worse. In whatever field, business, acting, or whatever, it's all about what you dream." Pam writes, "His tact is to always act as if it's impossible to fail. Whether he's painting, and he describes himself as a painting fiend, whether he's composing, his orchestral works have been performed in Moscow and London, or whether he's playing Hannibal Lecter, Richard Nixon, or King Lear. Absolutely anything is possible," he claims. Quote, "I don't know why we say no so much," close quotes. But the one conclusion he has come to is that our existence is far beyond understanding. "Whether you believe in God or you are an atheist," he says, "life is beyond explanation." Pam quotes him as saying, "I'm not clever enough to have designed this life. There has to be something bigger going on." Quote, "The only reason we don't see God is because we're always looking for him. God is in everything, and we are all connected. And while it's all in a dream within a dream, I'm compelled to say to whoever is running this show, thank you so very much." And then at the bottom of the blog post, it says, "Pam Grout is the author of 20 books, including E Squared, E Cubed, Thank and Grow Rich, and her latest book, which we are reading day by day, The Course in Miracles Experiment, a starter kit for your rewiring your mind, and therefore your world." So perhaps those thoughts are sparking some comment or question from our listening audience. 563-999-3581. You call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. What's on your mind? What is... What's turning your boat? What's twisting your sail? What's putting a hitch in your giddy up? What are you excited about positively in your life? With any luck, sometime today on journeystream.org/podcast, they will release the interview I did with Laura McGowan, who is the author of the book We Are the Luckiest. And that's available on journeystream.org/podcast. And if it hasn't posted yet, apparently it is posted. So if you go to journeystream.org/podcast, you can listen to the 40-some minutes of the interview with Laura McGowan, who has written one of the two books that I frequently recommend to people. That is all about the need for and the benefit of becoming more deeply and profoundly honest in our lives and with ourselves, and uncovering all of the various ways in which we're not as honest as we believe at times. I come into contact with people on a regular basis in my practice who, whether they realize it or not, have just created a rat's nest of omissions and half-truths and out-and-out lies that are making it very, very difficult for them to function. It takes a tremendous amount of mental, emotional energy to keep track of who you said what to and who is allowed to know this about you or that about you. And one of the things that so many of us don't even realize is that we've got various versions of ourself that we show in one place or another, or don't allow to be seen in other places. Guy Finley at one point in one of his talks says, we've become master seminar attendees and we learn all of this intellectual stuff. And yet, if we don't learn how to practically apply it to make our lives better, then we end up in situations where we're having a heart attack trying to figure out who we're supposed to be in this situation or that situation to keep from offending somebody or to get... make sure somebody still likes us when it's all said and done. And that is not useful. If I'm studying A Course in Miracles because I think, this woman I want to date is into Course in Miracles, and the more I learn about it, the better we're going to get along, it's probably going to be a bust. If I have a driving impulse within me to understand myself better, to be more conversant in my actual daily life with some of the critical spiritual principles that have been driving conversations and religions for centuries, then, picking up A Course in Miracles might be a useful thing to do. If I'm actually using the exercises, if I'm trying to usher myself into a position, into a place where I can have an experience that's significantly different in one way or another than all of the other experiences I've had up until now. What we're looking at, the idea that I can demonstrate to myself on a regular basis, which is that I'm the one creating my experience of life. And I do that with the thoughts I choose and the interpretations I place upon the situations I find myself in. I was talking to somebody earlier today, and they said, you know, when they're working with their sponsees in their AA group, they routinely say to these people, who they say they're upset about one thing or another that somebody said or did or didn't do that they think they should. And so they say to them, you know what? You're not supposed to know that. You weren't, this is none of your business. You know, that's not the thing that's making you upset. What's making you upset is your interpretation about it. You're pouring constant mental energy into the thought, this isn't supposed to be happening. That's what's creating your upset. And at the core of this work, whether it's the Way of Mastery, the Course in Miracles, the Course of Love, at the core of this work is the direct observation that I'm the one creating my experience of life every moment by the ways that I choose to interpret and then respond to the events of life. And when I think, as my culture has taught me to think, that you made me angry and you're hurting my feelings and you're offending me, I've just built a prison for myself, locked the door, and thrown away the key. No one else has done that to me. No one has offended me. If they come to me for a therapy session, and this happened just recently, and we had a therapy session, and I recommended to the person that he or she might want to look into a book or two, that, and we could continue our work together, and I talked about the usual things I do in a first session, and the person ended the session and seemed to be having a wonderful time and gladly agreed to get up, sign up for another session, and we scheduled it. And then, you know, 4 or 5 days later, I get a text message that says, I'm canceling. I don't think we're a good match. And it's done. I'm not coming back. Cancel my appointment. Well, if I'd gotten that text message or voicemail or email from somebody 20 years ago, I probably would have spent days obsessing about it. What did I do wrong? What did I say or what did I not say that I should have? I never should have recommended that book. How can I make it up to that person? Maybe I should call him. Maybe I should offer him a free session to see if I can fix it. And I would have put myself through at least days of emotional turmoil and upset. I've learned, thankfully, over the past 20, 25 years, with a lot of rigorous application of these observations and tools, that that person isn't upsetting me, and I shouldn't try to make myself over into the perfect therapist for that person. I should just continue being the best me I know how to be and trust that those people who are interested in working with me are the right ones to be working with me, and those who choose not to are the right ones to go work with somebody else. And if I start to feel sadness, or I start to feel regret or remorse, or I start to feel fear that I might have done something wrong, that's the signal that I should pick up a reality management worksheet and map out what I'm doing in my mind to create all of that emotional upset and choose to actively cancel the process that's creating the emotional upset and ask to be shown another way to look at this. I could ask myself, what am I making this situation mean? I could ask myself, what else might this mean? I could ask myself the series of questions from the Sedona Release Method or from Ho'oponopono, or the statements from there, or I could ask myself the questions from Byron Katie's work, or I could ask myself the questions in the first three steps of the Reality Management Worksheet and then map out my answers and then cancel all of that and ask to be shown something else. And with great regularity, when I do that, the transformation for the better in my life is significant and enduring. And it's based on observation. The primary observation with this work is no one outside of me, no thing outside of me is causing my emotional state or response. Yes, there are things that happen in the world and things that people do that might cause physical discomfort for me. They might cause me financial harm or financial adjustment. And yet, that is not what's responsible for any emotional state that I generate within me. And the more I recognize that, the more I observe it so I can see it directly in the moment, the more it gives me the liberty to respond in a way that has me focusing on what's the actual mechanism creating the emotional response in my system. And if I do that, I end up with far more practical and useful results in my life. I end up being able to use my emotional state as this guidance system. And when I'm feeling a calm, loving, compassionate, safe, secure set of emotions or joyful emotions, I can pretty well know my thoughts are probably headed in the right direction. And if I have any kind of a negative emotional response, tension, judgment, anger, hurt, I can know pretty consistently that my thoughts are headed in the wrong direction. And the solution is a course correction in my thoughts and then in my words and actions. The solution is not trying to force or manipulate someone or something outside of me to change so that I don't have to feel the emotional response that my own choice of interpretation is generating. We were talking about this yesterday with Susan. Susan was talking about having heard a comment from her grandson that is basically like the words of a terrorist, you know, threatening the hostages if you don't comply. And it doesn't matter what the situation is. If I have somebody that I know and they're experiencing a negative emotion and they say to me, I'm responsible for their negative emotion and they want me to change this, that, or the other thing so that they don't have to experience that, I can know instantly this is an error in thought. This is an inaccurate judgment of life and circumstances. And a far better response than changing what I'm doing to try and accommodate somebody else is to assist that person in seeing they are the ones who are creating their internal emotional state. They are the ones who have dominion over the thoughts they choose and the interpretations they choose moment to moment. And that's the only thing that's creating their emotional response. The more I do that for myself, the more I assist myself in moving from upset to compassion, the more I demonstrate to myself consistently and persistently over time that that's the only thing that's created my emotions, the easier it is for me to understand that I'm not creating other people's emotions either. They're not creating my negative emotions, and I'm not creating theirs. And with the use of these tools, I can move from the emotional upset that I thought was being caused by the outside and outside circumstances or people, and have an active, in the moment, in vivo demonstration that I'm feeling better even though nothing outside of me has changed. So we're encouraging people to step into that soon and often. We're encouraging people to recognize that when they choose a negative thought, Anthony Hopkins says, you know, you're in the process of creating your experience. So watch every thought you have, because the potential is there for you to create positively or negatively. So our call-in number is 563-999-3581. We have 30 minutes left. We have a total of 7 callers, and I don't see anybody in the chat room right now. So we can entertain your comments or questions, or we can start a topic of your choosing and discuss it for a while, or we can help somebody step through a worksheet if they think that would be of use to them. How can we support you today? I sent somebody a paragraph or two from the book, We Are the Luckiest, today, and it had to do with the idea of the phrase that came to me for this person was the phrase, let it burn. And the idea is that so often we find something, whether it's a drug or food or buying something or a game, a video game or whatever, but we find something to do to distract us from just feeling whatever we're feeling. And so the wisdom that Laura McGowan came to is it's so critically important to just stay with it, to let, even if the feeling feels like it's burning, let it churn, let it burn, feel whatever it is you're feeling. And the, while there are different levels of experience and capacity that each of us have for this, certain of us were given life experiences when we were young that were nurturing and supportive, and or we were just lucky with the genetics that we inherited, and we've got a greater or lesser tolerance for sitting with intense emotions. So it isn't going to be the same for everyone. And yet, what is the same for everyone is that I can't benefit my overall life situation and relationships by running from my emotions. I can run from them, and I can be fairly well convinced that I need to run from them to get distracted with drugs or alcohol or food or repetitive behaviors, or and I can do that, and I might feel that I might be absolutely convinced that I need to do that because I just can't tolerate, you know, staying with the experience of the emotions if they're too intense. And yet, only way to move my life to a better place, to heal relationships, to improve. I just got a text message that I don't understand. So let's see if we can get a clarification.
Hi, Dr. Tim. I thought it would be obvious. It shows that maybe I'm really, really in bad shape here. But I often reach for my iPhone when I start feeling uncomfortable.
Oh, so you're using
yeah.
that as a distraction, you mean? Okay.
Right. It's a real addiction. It is.
Well, anything that we use as a distraction, you know, it can work temporarily, but the point I'm making is that it doesn't have any long-term benefits. It might
absolutely.
Feel to me as though I absolutely need to do this because I cannot tolerate the intensity of my negative emotions. That might
right.
truly be the case. But at the same time that may be true, it's also true that avoiding those emotions is not helping anything long-term. It's not helping my relationships. It's not helping my mental health. It's not going to help, you know, my physical health or my finances. So.
Right. Well, I understand that. And what I think I'm doing is making a deal with myself. Okay, we need to parse these bad feelings out at a little more farther apart. And so I'm going to use my iPhone for a second, and then I'll come back to it. You know, anyway, I just got on the show, so I don't even know where you've been, and I apologize because I'm just jumping in. But when you said that, I thought, he didn't mention an iPhone use.
It's anything we use, right? Anything we use. And I read the blog post from Pam Grout that you sent from Anthony Hopkins, so we've talked briefly
Isn't that amazing?
Yep.
That's amazing to me.
He's tapping into the truths, and the truths are out there. They cut across religious and philosophical teachings and have for thousands and thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people like Guy Finley talk about how it's been around as long as there's been human consciousness. This wisdom was seeded, S-E-E-D-E-D, into this world.
Right.
Thousands and thousands of years ago. No one has a corner on the market. It's not one person who brought this into the world. It's not, you know, some human, you know, half God, half woman who, you know, brought it in. It's been around ever since there was human consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of all that, she had another quote. You know how she puts at the top of each chapter a quote? And this quote is by Rebecca Solnit. It says, "Memory of joy and liberation can become a navigational tool, an identity, a gift." And I was thinking how you say the same thing without saying it when you do the patter, the worksheet patter. When you stop us and you say, go to that place that she calls a memory of joy or liberation, and that becomes the navigational tool. Once again, it's just that the wisdom is right out there, and here's another way of saying that.
Yeah, it is. It's one of the things that I get into territory where people start getting upset on a regular basis, and I can't control that upset. At the same time, I can't honestly buy into the idea that one church, one religion, one minister, one spiritual teacher, one guru has something that is new.
Yeah. I agree with you, and yet when I do the worksheet, it's, to me, that was new. And it was new because it helped me focus my thoughts, organize my thoughts, limit my crazy thoughts to one feeling, one thought, one story, and find my way to the universal upset. The basic upset underneath it all that might be applicable across the board. And you can find your way there using that tool. So it's true. I'm tempted when I talk to people about this work. I can say the truth is out there. It's all over the place. But you've got to get there using this tool. This is how you get there. So I've been guilty of that. Of thinking the only way I ever found to get there. So it's good to be reminded there are even other ways of getting there.
Yeah, I had somebody today tell me that one of his teachers said to him, hey, Larry, what else might this mean, whatever the life situation is?
Uh-huh.
And he said to me, you know, that reminds me, Dr. Hayes, of your question, what am I making this situation mean? It's the same wisdom,
mm-hmm.
a slightly different word format.
Right.
I'm the one that creates the meaning that I place on life events, and it only has the meaning for me that I give to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that, you know, I've been talking about these two books, The Untamed and The Surprising Magic of a Sober Life. We are the luckiest, The Surprising Magic of a Sober Life, because of the way both of these women have discovered and write so beautifully about the need for deeper and deeper honesty.
Mm-hmm.
And it is shocking sometimes how far we move from total honesty in our regular daily pattern. You know, I think I've mentioned this before, but one of the chapters in that book is titled The Truth About Lying. And when I did the interview with Laura, she said, that's the chapter people talk about most often.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, she talks, writes beautifully about how dishonesty, and beginning with omissions and then eventually little white lies, et cetera, and crept into her life to the point where she was always having to keep track of what had she said here and there and who was she supposed to be with this group of people. And
right. There's an old Chinese saying, he who lie must have long memory. You probably have heard that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And she talks about how, you know, after years of that kind of a cycle, she had a friend who was truly a friend who invited her over to his house for a Saturday get-together, and he came in and said, I just want to tell you something. And all he said to her was, you don't have to lie.
That is so cool. I remember that. Yeah.
And she said, I replied instantly with my usual, I know, I got this. You know, I'm competent. I'm an adult. I'm a smart person. I know. You don't have to tell me. I understand everything. And she got defensive, but then she stopped herself. And he asked,
yay.
And she asked him for examples, and he was able to give her, you know, a whole series of examples. And then she just burst out
mm-hmm.
crying.
Yeah. What a friend.
Yeah.
Mm.
But that was the beginning, and it wasn't like throwing a switch. She talks about how, you know, he gave her that gift, and then she continued to lie and to drink and lie about drinking and lie about a whole bunch of other things, and for, you know, a year or two or three. But eventually what she did was she found, through the group of people that she was using to get sober, the community that she found examples in her life of people who were just absolutely committed to being honest.
Yeah.
And she says, I still have to work on it every day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, think about all of the different ways and places in your life where you're not 100% open and honest about
right.
what's going on for you.
Yeah, so true.
And, of course, this doesn't mean I can't have any privacy. This simply means I'm not going to lie about it if confronted or if someone asks me.
Mm-hmm.
I was having a conversation with somebody the other day in a session, and she said, and this is something I would never want my fiance to know. Wait, you know, use your most colorful imagination to figure out what Dr. Hayes's response was to that. Dr. Tim did not sit there impassively and let that huge pink striped elephant saunter through the room. I got out of my chair. I jumped on the elephant's back. I started flapping its ears and directing it in various circles around the room until I got the point across. What do you mean? This is something you never want your fiancé to know. This is a person that you want to share your life with and your bed with and the rest of your life with.
Mm-hmm.
And, and what you're saying to me is, I want to have a fundamentally dishonest and shaky relationship with my fiancé? No, she says. No, I'm not saying that at all. Okay, well then, let's rethink this. Oh my gosh, you don't mean I should tell him everything that's ever happened to me in my past? Well, I don't believe I said those words. However, my relationship to a series of events in my past, And if I have decided these are things I have to keep secret, every bit of mental energy I put on keeping that a secret is feeding an identical amount of energy into the conclusion that I'm damaged, I'm broken, I'm unlovable, and if the person I'm trying to keep the secret from found out about it, he or she would attack me or run away from me. So this is the actual dynamic in us human beings by which we keep ourselves sick with our secrets.
Mm-hmm.
So while I didn't tell her, you need to go home right now and tell this to that person, because there's nothing about it that directly affects their health and safety and welfare and finances for today. It's an event from the past. But at the same time that I'm telling her she doesn't have to go home and tell him all about this right now, if she wants to be healthier and if she wants to be able to engage in a healthy, loving relationship with any other human being, she needs to be okay if and when somebody finds out about this. She needs to know she's already okay and whole as a person, even though this thing happened in the past.
Right.
That the fact that it happened doesn't increase or decrease her value as a person. And therefore, there is no need for her to put any mental energy into hiding it from someone.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to me, that's a world of difference from holding the thought, oh boy, I don't ever want him to find this out.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that happened. I'm not proud of it. On a good day, if faced with the opportunity today, I would not choose what I chose back then. I've learned a lot of lessons from it, and it's not going to define me. I'm not going to let it define me.
Right.
So, that was a bit of a tangent, but there you have it.
Now, it's a very interesting question, and I don't know if it's appropriate to mention that Jeannie and Michael have very openly discussed the fact that Jeannie finally told Michael about some things in her past that she hadn't told anyone for whatever reason, but it only deepened their relationship when she did. But
right.
That would
that's,
be something
that's all,
she would, yeah.
Well, that's all it ever does in a healthy relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's the truth only, always and forever, deepens healthy relationship.
Mm-hmm.
The truth might also reveal a very unhealthy, broken pattern of interaction that's been masquerading as a healthy relationship. But it doesn't destroy.
Yeah, I understand.
It doesn't,
sure.
Yeah, it doesn't destroy a healthy relationship.
That's good.
I'm
going to
go back and listen to that on the tape, because I don't think I've ever said it that way before. But
that was good, Dr. Tim. A quotable quote. Well,
but a lot of people would create some mental gymnastics and some ways to prove to you that, oh no, I told this person the truth and it was the end of our relationship, right? And that, when, however I just said it, is talking to the fact that if the truth comes to light and is openly shared, it will only, always and forever, strengthen any healthy relationship. Mm-hmm. And if a pattern of interacting meets the truth and then the pattern breaks off, all the truth did was reveal it as not a healthy pattern of interaction, not a healthy
right.
relationship mm-hmm. to begin with.
Right. Well, we're sort of leaking into a topic, and if you don't have somebody's hand up, it's a
no,
whole new one related to this.
Go ahead.
I have had a relationship with a woman who I went to see as a counselor years ago when I had shingles, and I was pre-worksheet, pre-You Guys radio show. I went to her because the shingles was severe, and I had a lot of anxiety, brain fog, fatigue. I was really at the end of my rope. And she was, I learned about her as a healer and someone who could help me get through it. And she did help me. She helped me very much. And then I saw her for a while and stopped working with her because her manner of working was scary to me, and I know that's my issue. She said I had dark entities around me and dark forces, and I began to feel that she was rather dark, and I didn't feel safe. And then Michael Rice's work came on, and I found it so safe, so non-invasive, and yet probing, that I stopped working with her. But somehow we kept in touch, and we became sort of friends. And then she recently learned this new modality called biomagnetism, and she called me up and she said, you know, what are the things you'd like to fix? Well, you know, when I play the piano, my ears ring because I have tinnitus, and it's worse when I play the piano. I have sleeping issues, et cetera, you know, a sore arm. I gave her the list. Hello. And she said she could, I'm walking home, she said she could fix me because she had been doing this herself, and she said, I've never felt better. I'm just in great shape, and I want to, you know, and she offered me some sessions for which I would pay. But she said, let's do three sessions, and you'll notice right away. Well, I don't know whether it's my resistance or what, but after my first session, which she had many reactions to, she was going, oh, do you feel that? I feel it. And I thought, I don't feel anything. I'm sitting there thinking, I'm that woman, and is it hair? Is this hand? I felt nothing. You know, I thought, well, what's going on here? I said to her, you know, you're getting a lot of benefit out of this session, and it's great. And she said, oh, no, I wish that were true. You're the one getting the benefit. And I thought, well, maybe I'll feel it later. I know. This is a funny story, but I'm gullible, Dr. Tim, and I'm also susceptible to sweeping promises and the pressure a person can put on me. I knuckle under. I don't keep a good boundary, and that dovetails with boundaries we were talking about yesterday. Well, I'm about to have my second session. After my first session, I had a weekend of serious anxiety, and there were things going on in the family, and I did my worksheets, but I didn't think that the magnetism session was helpful. And my tinnitus is as bad as ever. I had to go get a shot in my arm, which helped, a cortisone in the bursa. And there are other issues in there, but I had an x-ray, and he said, you've got bone-on-bone arthritis in that arm from that injury. You really traumatized that arm. And I don't want to operate on it, but, you know, you're highly functional with that arm. It's just not up to your standard. You're used to moving around and being, you know, fully functional, and you're not fully functional in that arm, and I can see why you're frustrated, but I wouldn't want to touch it. I'll give you some exercises. And so on and so forth. But here I am about to have my second session at 3 o'clock, and I'm in full-blown resistance, thinking she's not for real, this isn't for real, I'm not going to get anything out of it. I'm setting myself up anyway, and I haven't kept... I had reservations. I should have said, you know, I'm very happy with the work I'm doing with Michael Rice and Jim Hayes, and I'm just going to stick with that. But I appreciate, I could have said that. I didn't say it because I felt pressure from her to
do this. And you can take a look at with the worksheet process or journaling, whatever you like to do better, you can take a look at what your goal was that led you to override your intuition.
Right.
And cancel that goal and find out what that underlying dynamic is that, at least in this case, was driving you to do something that's against your better judgment.
Yeah. And I've done worksheets. I've been doing them for a couple of weeks. And it all comes back to power person dynamics, wanting to be pleasing, wanting to be liked, wanting to be well thought of, you know, the old garbage. I guess more or less I'm confessing.
But here's the idea is that you want to keep doing those things. You want to keep doing those worksheets because if you're still in the space of denying your better judgment, there's more work to do. There's more underlying dynamic.
Totally. I agree. There is.
You might call it, you know, deeper layers of the same fear or trauma or hope for resolution.
Yeah, and I'm afraid that if I get nothing out of this, she'll say, well, you're in severe resistance. Of course you're not getting anything out of it. And I am. Anyway, thank you for listening to that, Dr. Kim.
And if she says that, then you can praise her for her insight. Wow, you're really intuitive. You nailed that completely. I am. I'm in resistance. I didn't want to do this in the first place.
Oh, I love it.
Well, that would be honest, right?
Yes, and you're talking about honesty, and I haven't been honest. But I, you know, Ramakrishna used to say, tell the truth, but not a harsh truth. And I haven't found the middle ground with this particular person to have a gentle truth. I mean, it's either, okay, I'll do it, or I think you're a fraud. And I haven't found the middle ground. The middle ground would be something like what I just said a minute ago about, I've found a great way to do my work, and it works, and it's worked for 4.5 years now or something. And so I'm going to stick to that, but I appreciate the offer. Gosh, that sounds perfectly fine.
Oh. Yeah, it should. Yeah, it should sound really fine. Because it is, because it's just honest.
Yeah. Well, we're coming up to the end of the hour.
We've done it. That's right. I just looked up and we've expired our hour, so thank you so much for being here. Apparently, I think we might have Michelle joining us today. Is that you, Michelle?
Yeah, it is. Hi, Dr. Tim.
Hello, Michelle.
Hi, Susan. Just coming on the show.
All right. Well, thank you, Susan, for being with us. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Have a great show.
Thank you. All right. Well, happy Tuesday. Today's March 23rd, 2021, and I'm Michelle Pichet, filling in for Jeannie. and I'm here today with Dr. Michael Rice. We warmly welcome you to the show, and thank you for choosing to be with us. Call-in number is 563-999-3581. Press 1, and it puts you in the queue to talk with our host. We encourage you to call in with your comments or questions, allowing you to actively strengthen and deepen your practice. So now let's welcome Michael in support of developing our inner process of Aramaic forgiveness. And hi, Susan, your microphone is still on. And so if you want to keep me company while we wait for Michael,
sure.
Be nice.
I'm walking. I'm about to go in my house. There'll be a little noise, but thanks. I'd be happy to.
So I haven't been on the show for a couple of months. I was in Mexico, and I thought it would just be best to set the commitment aside for a little bit in case there were internet issues and what have you. So I'm not sure. I think Dr. Michael had put together a workshop online. Are you participating in that?
Yes. Yep, I am. We did a first 14-week one where we were the preliminary guinea pigs, and it turned out to be extremely effective and successful using Zoom. And Magda was the one that said, you know, here we are facing each other. When we go to a retreat in Heartland, we're all sitting in rows looking at Michael and the backs of each other's heads. Here we are looking at our faces, and there's something really wonderful about that, and that was true. And in order to get the benefit of the retreat, we couldn't do 9 full days of Zoom, of course, so Michael parsed it out. 2.5 or 3 hours on a Sunday afternoon, and 2 hours on a Tuesday night to start. And those of us who were in it got a tremendous amount about it. And he made and he recorded all of the video sessions, questions and answers and his presentations, which turned out to be a ready-made mine for a second retreat. And all the work had been done. So he said, how about we run it again, but format it so that new people get the assignment of listening to the ready-made Zoom things, and then we meet live 2 hours on Wednesday nights. You oldies can come in free of charge. You new people pay a fee, and I don't know how that fee compared to the original one. And so we're having a second set of 14 weeks. And
okay. You guys are in the middle
of
that right now.
What?
You're in the middle of that right
now. Yeah, we're in the
middle
of it. Yeah, and our assignment, even for the oldies, is we're told you're invited to be support people. You don't have to be there for all the sessions, and you don't have to listen to the videos, but we strongly recommend that you listen to them as if you've never listened before. And so I've been listening. Kim Bingham has not so much, but I have, and I get, you know how it is. You hear something 25 times, and then suddenly you say, oh, my God, I finally got that.
So oh, my God.
It's been good to hear them again.
Yeah,
that's the retreat that we're doing, and we're about halfway through the second set, and I think he's going to keep it rolling so more and more of us can be support people for more and more new people who come on and listen to the presentations. And I imagine we'll be adding, because those Wednesday night live ones on Zoom are also recorded, so they'll be part of the resources for next time. It's really incredibly creative of Michael and Jeannie to figure this out, and Jeannie is doing overtime with, you know, sending. We have a website, a private website group, Codependence to Interdependence. And she posts links and films and, input from people. And So it's more than anybody can use or handle. It's just rich.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then the next time we do the intensive, we'll invite everybody who's been to the first two. We'll do the same thing with another 2 hours per week. So we'll create another 28 hours of video that will become part of the library that's available to the next group of people. And, you know, we're kind of calling it a rolling intensive where everybody that's done it gets to come back and play every time we do it again. So it's a win-win all the way around. We're also looking at, because, of course, there are staggering start times when people want to come in, we're looking at maybe doing a reduced fee where someone can get access, can join the intensive and get access to all of the videos, including the personal code evaluation. And even though there won't be a live component to it, they'll have access to, like, by the time we're finished with this intensive, I think we're at about 86 hours of live video with the group. And so they'll have access to all of that. And then if they want to, the next time we do it live, they'll be able to join live, pay an upgrade fee, and be part of the live intensive. So it's all the way around. I mean, Zoom is just such a blessing, and this whole, you know, being able to do it online is going to, I think, take us to a whole other level with making the work available. So it's pretty cool.
And guess what's happening? And Michael's not telling this, but the immersion that he and Jeannie are experiencing by doing this has caused Jeannie and Michael to have huge learning episodes, and new material is coming out. Michael is crafting a long worksheet, which we, what the heck is it, PowerPerson? I mean, what is it? It's
the PowerPerson worksheet, yeah.
Yeah.
I've been working on it the last couple of days.
Oh, yeah, and it's extended from the original one, and it really helps us dive deeper into issues with our power persons. And so the creative process is nabbing Michael and Jeannie, too. Jeannie has had a couple of breakthroughs of her own, and I'm wondering, it's just this immersion. You just have to go there, and the rest of us are...
Right. It's definitely taken both of us to a whole different level.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty exciting.
I think that's happening
in fact,
for the second time arounders too, Michael.
Yeah. I think that's what's going to, that I see as the benefit of the rolling intensive. It's going to just keep people supported,
mm-hmm.
engaged, and extending
mm-hmm.
support, which of course we teach best that which we most need to learn. And you know,
yeah.
Keep it moving. Keep it rocking. And
right.
Actually, Jeannie's brother is here right now, and he's picking up her dad until Sunday, and we're going to have an intermission. We've got Arya Rain. We had her yesterday. We've got her today. And thank you for being available to do the show today, Michelle. We appreciate it. And so when we complete the show, we're actually turning our phones off. Until Sunday, we're going to be incommunicado. So we're just going to take time to breathe. And you know, we've been doing a lot of work. Jeannie's been doing a lot of energy field work on me and breathing me, and vice versa. I've been breathing her. And there's just a whole new level of aliveness and the presence of love in our home and in our relationship, which has just gone to made a quantum leap. So we're going to take the next 3 or 4 days and do our own intensive and just get quiet and be with it. So,
are you not going to do the radio show, Michael?
We're on Thursday and Friday, tomorrow and Friday, we're going to do a pre-recorded session so that we're just in our own space for the next 4 days. You know, we haven't had that for, I don't know, 8 months ago, Jeannie's brother came, picked up her dad, but we haven't had any real alone time between
mm-hmm.
you know, Arya Rain and Dad at 88, Arya Rain at 29 months. You know, they're an interesting, sweet, wonderful pair of bookends, and we're looking forward to just getting a few days to ourselves. So hold the space for us if you would. Send love.
Great.
So, Michelle, how are you, young lady?
I'm fine, Michael.
Are you still down in Mexico?
Well, I left Mexico Saturday, and I flew Tucson. And so that's been nice. My son is here. Well, actually, he wasn't here. He was driving back from Florida. His plans changed. And so I went to Sedona for a couple days, and I just got back to Tucson yesterday. And I'm supposed to leave to go home tomorrow, but I'm not going to because Miss Alyssa is at my house with her boyfriend, and she has COVID. So I am going to just stay put until my house gets decontaminated. She was FaceTiming me when she was in line to get the test, and I realized, I'm like, why are you driving my car to get your COVID test? So I'm going to extend my time in Arizona right now. Michael, are you muted?
Excuse me, I was mute challenged, and I was just saying that, well, it sounds like it would be nice to have that space with your son. And we certainly hold the space for your daughter to clear this out of her system and be free of all effects of it. It strengthens her immunity and her physiology, and she's able to rock on. And when you get back home, your house is clean and clear and heading to the next level, immunity and strength.
One of my thoughts is I'm going to have her go bring up to the basement the ionizer. Do you remember when you had me suggested by? And I'm like,
yep.
Oh, that is going to wipe out what I need to wipe out.
Yes. In your car, too. Although you don't want to leave it in your car too much. Are you talking about the hydrogen peroxide or the ozone machine?
Yeah, the ozone thing. I know it destroys the rubber.
Yeah, you can do it briefly. You just don't want to leave it for a long time in the car because it will start to eat up the rubber. So, but a couple hours will probably detoxify it and leave it clean and clear, and all systems go.
I remember we did that at Heartland, and I saw it work just so effectively.
Yes, ozone is a wonderful thing.
So, Susan sounds pretty excited about...
So, Miss Susan, do you have any other thoughts for us?
Who were you talking to right then?
To you, young lady, wondering if you had any other thoughts. And thank you for the testimonial, by the way.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, I don't, actually. I do, but they're on a piece of paper somewhere in the house, and I'm down in the basement hanging laundry, and I can't think of them.
Uh-huh.
But when I go up, and if nobody calls in, I'll push one again.
Sweet, sweet. Well, you're going to have fun when you see the renovation. I spent a lot of hours renovating the Power Person worksheet, and that's going to be the one worksheet that we won't be putting on the website. It's so detailed and so in-depth that it really takes the intensive to comprehend, I think, and make sense of it. So, it's being renovated significantly from the first round.
Great.
And I'll be excited about getting it out to everybody. Hopefully I'm going to finish that today by the time Ari leaves here and we'll get it out. And
so
then
that reminds
have a little vacation.
Of the question.
Yes.
The first one was, you've probably already fixed it. But question number two, I didn't understand with your wording. I couldn't understand what you were driving at. I answered it as I thought you might mean, but you've probably fixed that already. Right?
Okay. Well, number two has changed significantly, so yes.
Okay. All right. And the other question is, I think...
Round.
The other question is, and I think you just answered it, but I'm going to ask anyway. I have a Zoom support group, and I wanted to ask your permission to show it to them on our Zoom group, but I guess not.
Oh, Well, let me put that in the hopper to think about, because it was it's pretty intricate, and you know, I'd already made the decision it would just be for the intensive group. So let me put that.
Michael, I can hardly hear you. It's very muffled. I don't know if Michelle experienced
that, any better?
That too. Yeah.
Is that better? Okay. My apology. My microphone kind of slipped. So I've got it back up in place. So let me think about that one.
Okay. My group is
right.
Tomorrow, and we don't have to do it tomorrow, but if you think about it and get an answer, let me know.
Okay.
Because they will.
I will.
They
Thank
will
you.
Love it. These people are amazing, the work they do. So.
You know, one of the things, Susan, that always, I mean, for decades has struck me is that I find it amazing how the innate intelligence, the being of each individual, once it breaks through to them and they hear it, the genius ways in which they take it and run with it, things, you know, that I never thought about and use it. In fact, that's been a big part of how I've learned it is I've taught it, and then people went off and did this with it. It's like, well, never intended that, but that's awesome. Great. We'll put that in the hopper. So that wisdom that's in every person, you know, when we start tapping it on the shoulder and waking it up, it's pretty awesome how it moves through the issues that need to be dealt with and how gracefully, how powerfully. It's most gratifying. So, Michelle, do you have anything on your mind for today?
You know, not really. Well, actually, we have a Susan was 610. So did I? Maybe I just muted her. Okay. I feel kind of spacey from being in Sedona. I never had that reaction before, but I decided that I was going to do my client sessions outside yesterday, and so I was so impressed because the cell phone worked, the cell like reception worked perfectly, and so I sat near a vortex of energy, and I did 5 hours of work with talking with my clients from that location, and I feel like it like wiped my brain. Can't think. I'm like, I've been the best listener because it's like I'm feeling detached and kind of spacey still. So I don't know what's happening. I'm just kind of watching it.
Sounds like you're achieving the objective of being out of your mind. Good place to be. You will be delightfully pleased by the wisdom that comes in when you let go of, you know, the projections, you know, the whole, actually we've been reading the book, so we're on the chapter on projection externalization and with the character Richard in the book. And, you know, when you let the mind just go, that's where the truth, that's where the deepest wisdom lies, that's where the five smooth stones lie, that's where enlightened perception comes from. So it's a good place to be. I know that, for instance, when I'm doing the show, you know, I'm in a room with the door closed, and it's like I'm 1,000% focused on what's happening here, and it's like, thank you, but don't even open my door, because that vibe is a distraction from being focused from that state. So congratulations. Hold the space for you to keep deepening it. It's an amazing place to live. It's where we're all designed to live. And we talked to Cecilia yesterday. Yeah. Cecilia was describing that with, you know, she called into the show last week and had some pretty intense stuff going on. We gave her a couple of assignments. She did them. And, you know, as she's talking about what her result was, she was basically talking about being out of her mind, being living in that state and how sweet it is. You know, it's like, yeah, that's where we're designed to be. And then, you know, if the mind's got something we need, we turn to the mind as a servant it's supposed to be and gather its information and make choices. Where if we're in the reverse posture where whatever's firing in brain cells, whatever the mind is doing, runs our lives, it leads to a lot of trouble because all it can do is replicate the past. So Sounds like you're getting out of the replicant mind and into the, you know, what the ancients called the mind of Christ. Nothing religious about it, just that there is a mind of love in us, that if we choose to live there, the whole game is different. Everything is different. So, sweet.
Yeah, it was a nice part about Mexico, because there were so few distractors and so few things triggering me. It's like a forced, you know, well, it's a geographical cure, right? But because that's the conditions, then there's a lot of extra energy that can go towards, like, self-exploration and healing, personal growth, the things that I was focused on for myself. And
nice.
So when we do forgiveness work, we're removing that distraction, so to speak.
Exactly.
When we go back to peace, but so then if you can, you know, when you really clear all those aberrant energies, then you're left with just this creative mind. Like, I noticed my psychic abilities were improving. My intuition was improving. So it felt, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? That, like, then you can see the result. Like, oh, that's what's available when I'm not, you know, holding all this anger within me.
Nice work.
Yeah,
right on track. That's what we're here for.
So when you were saying about reading the book, like, how do you approach that? Do you just read, like,
well,
a couple pages?
No, it's actually been, it's kind of surprised me because I'm usually spending, you know, 10 to 20 minutes on just a paragraph is all it takes. You know, we're up to, what's this, almost the end of March, and we're to page 47 out of 204 pages. So 3 months, 4 times 3, that'd be just about a year. It'll take us to go through it if we stay at this pace. So we're on the chapter,
like,
and if you've got the book.
About it.
You got a question?
No, I say you're explaining it as you go.
Yeah. Reading it and getting into some discussion about it and then fielding questions on it. So we're on the chapter, What is Projection Externalization? If you've got your book there, we're on page 47. And if you don't have a book, it's out of print, but you can buy it on Amazon or eBay. Usually they've got used copies. You know, we've spread several tens of thousands around the country 25 years ago, and so they're still hanging around, which is kind of nice to see. And so you can buy them on Amazon or eBay, usually for $2, $3, $4. And or you can go to our website and download it free. And our website is whyagain.org. And if you go to the book, click on the book and drill down, you'll find a link to download the book. So we've been talking to Richard about this idea of denial leads to dissociation. Dissociation leads to attracting somebody in to bring our traumas to the surface again. And when we stay in the denial and dissociation phase and we make up pictures of other people, we project the content of the brain cells they resonate with us into our brain's image of them, and they show up in our mind with our problem attached. And then we externalize that projection, pretend it's outside of us, and now we think we've gotten rid of it. So we've just been talking to Richard about the fact that, well, actually the last sentence that I read to Richard in our conversation with Richard yesterday was, we've done ourselves a major disservice when we project, for what we have cut ourselves off from is a part of our belief system that needs healing. And Richard responds, almost exploding with excitement as he expressed his thoughts. You mean it's all an inside job, Tender? As long as I project and externalize my projections, I pretend that you're responsible for my reality, and by doing so, I block truth. Being out of touch with truth is at the root of my feelings of powerlessness. He says that with a question mark in his mind. Once I grasp that it's my holding on to that that keeps me re-experiencing the same painful scenarios, I can let go of it, those cycles, by using the tools. this is actually starting to make sense, he says. If you remember several times earlier in the book, he says, Michael, you're a little crazy. But here he is saying, yeah, this is starting to make sense. I'm surprised. I feel hopeful. Like it's something I can actually do, he continued, his voice sounding a little lighter. I've always been terrified around women and never did understand how I could feel that helpless in front of someone who was 8 inches shorter and 60 pounds lighter than I am. Now I see that whenever I hold a reality based on the belief that I'm powerless, anyone who triggers that reality in me can make me believe that I'm powerless. Is that right? And so Richard's starting to get the story, starting to get to the point of, oh, I got it. Here's what I'm doing to myself. And when we realize that and it's all done, all the drama and trauma is done with smoke and mirrors, then we can start to change the dynamics that are running in the carbon-based memory system. And those dynamics always default, always go back. And we're talking about codependency, interdependence. And this new worksheet that we're working on is called the Power Person Worksheet, where we're looking at really delineating all aspects of this power person dynamic. And my thesis coming out of the codependence to interdependence intensive work is that literally, I don't mean this in any figurative sense whatsoever, but absolutely, totally, 100% literally, the whole world is run by this power person dynamic. The denied and dissociated parts of the mind are triggered into activity. And when stress is building up, what I'll do is I'll default to whatever behaviors I saw my power person do that I hated the most. And I hated them because when they used those dynamics, that's how they took control or power over me. And so when under stress, you know, when the stress is up and the chips are down, what the mind does is it searches through. You know, basically the functioning purpose of the mind is to give you structures, to give you content and directions that will most successfully help you achieve the goals that you have. That's the simple, single purpose of the mind. It's not to run your life. It's not to source your goals. It's not to decide what you're going to do with your life. It's designed as a servant to give you information, the best information it has. And when we don't reach in and bring correction to it, we don't clean up the multi-generational database aspect of our own minds, then we default to whatever God did that caused us to become subject to God. And in this case, God being the... You know, if I'm in a situation where the stress is up and the chips are down, I look back through all of my unconscious data and I say, what did the person who controlled my life, oh, I've got a little munchkin who just came in the room. Hey, sweetie. Hey, you. What you doing? What are you up to? Hi. Do I get a hug before you go? No? Oh, you got a poopy diaper. You got to go change it. Okay. All right. Well, you know, you heard it here first. So anyway, back to the conversation. When I don't know what to do, I'm going to look at who is the greatest authority in my life, and that's your power person, usually a parent, though not always. And so unconsciously, I'll default to looking through my unconscious mind and going, what did this power person, this God who really won over me, I had the power over me, what did they do in order to win? So now I've got somebody, if the stress is up and the chips are down, that I think I need to win or control or whatever the game is, and I'll default to the thing I hated that they did to me the most, which at least gave the appearance of them having power over me. And so I buy into the belief that, well, I can have power over someone else by doing this. But in doing so, I just replicate the generational dynamics over and over and over and over again. And as I realize that, I tap into the tool of forgiveness, and forgiveness being the tool of deletion. Literally, it's like the delete key on your computer. Of course, to delete something, you've got to access it. The genius, Yeshua, 2,000 years ago, showed us how to access, when the stress is up and the chips are down, the core information that needed to be deleted. And it was forgiveness. And it wasn't anything to do with what the Greeks taught us about how we're going to let somebody else off the hook because this is moving in me, this pain, this trauma, this stress, this whatever's going on. But that the process by which my mind determines which data it's going to use to try to help me be successful at whatever this project is, the thing that determines that is my goals. And when I cancel a goal, what happens is all of the insane advice that my mind has to offer me when the stress is up and the chips are down collapses in on itself. And when it collapses in on itself, I now have access, direct access, in the presence of love, to that dissociated content. Now I can effectively start to change my mind rather than just replicate the generations. And so that's the objective of this work, and that's what we're here to support you in doing, and again, successfully achieving the result of being out of your mind. And that you only turn to it when it has information you need. Otherwise, you live as a being independent of your mind and able to function, you know, as the thinker apart from your thoughts, the actor apart from your actions, feeler apart from your feelings. And when you can do that, then you start to recognize that none of those things are me. I'm something different than that. And I don't have to be run by that. We're looking to wake that part up. Go ahead, Michelle.
Area code 808. I turn on your microphone.
Hello.
Hi, Mama.
Hey there, young lady. Welcome.
Hi. Okay, I'm going to turn this off now.
How are you today?
Well, I'm fine. I haven't been able to access the. Call in for the pro. Oh, hold on! I have to get it off the computer now. Oh shoot!
It's okay. Take a breath. Relax.
Okay.
You can relax now. Yeah, come on and open your eyes.
Yeah, all right. That's one of the most beautiful songs ever written.
That is awesome, isn't it?
Oh, wow, yeah. Well, I called in for the show yesterday and got Blog Talk, and the lady with the British accent said there are no shows scheduled within the next 24 hours. That was Monday, the 22nd. Same thing happened this morning, the 23rd. So I got on the internet, and I'm sitting here listening to the show, and it's slightly on a 30-second different timeline than real life. But anyway, could you repeat the plan for the upcoming week one more time for me, please? I know you said something about taking a vacation and. That you and Jeannie will have some time on your own.
The plan that Jeannie and I have?
What?
You're asking me about the plan that Jeannie and I have for the rest of this week?
I'm asking you what availability, I don't really know why I haven't been able to reach the show directly through my phone line. I'm reaching Blog Talk, but I'm not getting the program. But that's one. That's one aspect of what's going on. But my real question, the reason I'm called, is that, we have a session tomorrow, right, with the intensive?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then after that, did you say that you were going, that there would be no radio program? I'm unclear about what the plan is for the next few days.
Got the question.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
So tomorrow we'll do a radio show. Tomorrow night we'll do the codependence, the interdependence intensive. And then Jeannie and I, Ari will not be here for the rest of the week. And Jeannie's brother is actually here now picking up her dad to take him back to visit with him for a few days. So we're going to have from this evening when Aria leaves here, goes back home, we're going to have the next 4 days or 5 days to ourselves.
Oh,
so we'll
great.
Just be doing the radio show tomorrow and then the intensive tomorrow night. And then Thursday and Friday's radio shows will be pre-recorded. Gene's picked out a couple
okay,
of really hot
good.
Shows. They'll be pre-recorded. Uh-huh. And as far okay. as not getting in, maybe send Jeannie whatever documentation you've got there. We haven't had anybody else reporting problems lately.
I know.
So I'm not sure what's going on, but...
Yeah. Well, anyway, I just thought I'd let you know. I was kind of unclear, but I'm clear now on the plan.
Good.
So I will I will get off, let someone else get on the call, and I will look forward to the intensive call, the 2-hour call tomorrow.
Okay. See you tomorrow night at 6:00 Eastern Time.
All right. All right. Love and blessings,
blessings
to everyone.
All right.
Aloha.
To you too. All right. Aloha.
Okay.
Hi, so we've got about 25 minutes left for wide open conversation. What's on your mind? How's this idea of blockage of truth working? It's interesting. Back in the early days of Laws of Living, when we were developing it, and this idea of blockage of truth came out of Laws of Living over the decades. And we actually used to teach that in Laws of Living as blockage of personal error. In other words, this person couldn't see the error that they were making, so they'd go on stumbling over the same error. When somebody would tell them, they'd go, no, that's not true about me. That's, you know, they'd go into Satan, the resistor, one who misleads. They'd get trapped in that resistance and be misled by their own minds. And it was probably... after about 10 years of working with the idea of blockage of personal error, that all of a sudden it got clear to me that, no. These people are seeing their errors perfectly. They're just calling them the truth. And so when I tell or I allow my mind to lie to me, what would be an example of a lie? Well, in the context of our conversation with Richard just now, I deny ownership for my pain. By denying ownership for my pain, by thinking that my pain is caused by somebody or something outside of me, either thinking that or speaking that, leaves me in denial, means that I have to dissociate from what the real cause of my pain is. So when I dissociate from that, my mind then serves me up a lie, literally. If I say to my mind, they made me mad, my mind is literally going to hallucinate a whole perceptual construct, which will show me a picture, literally show me somebody out there who is causing me to be mad, and I'll see it. And that's a total lie, but when I call that lie truth, now I'm stuck in blockage of truth. It wasn't blockage of personal error. Personal error is seen. I got a picture in my mind, and this is all your fault. Well, yes, I've been through it 87 different times with 42 different people over decades and decades and decades, but it's still, it's your fault. I can see that it's your fault. That's a lie. It's an error. And when I call that error truth, there's no room in my mind for truth. Remember, we've talked about the Harvard research that shows that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells fire, the max amount of data that gets into conscious awareness, the max amount of information that's used to build my perceptual construct in any given 1/25th of a second is 9 bits of data out of 10,000 brain cells firing. So when I allow false data, the lie, you made me mad, you made me say, you made me afraid, you hurt me, that disturbed me, they upset me, all of those phrases are total lies. And if you don't believe me and you got one of those things going on right now that you know it's somebody else in your life, then let me ask you a question. How long have you known that person? Well, somebody might say, well, I just met them last week. Somebody else might say, I've known them 5 years. Somebody else, I've known them for 20 years. Okay. Now, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to challenge you to go back to the moment before you knew that person. And this pained perceptual construct in your mind that you say is being caused by them, did you know that quality of pain before you ever met them? Guess what the answer has been 100% of the time of the thousands of people I've asked that question of over the decades? It's always yes. Well, yeah, I did know that before I met them. So you're actually believing the lie your mind is telling you, that they're the cause of something that was going on long before you ever met them. It's like, get out of the liar. I love what David Bohm says. You know, that the mind's capacity to deceive is infinite. And you got to shut that deceiver down. The way you shut that deceiver down is by canceling the goal that drives your mind to tell you the lie. And when you do, the lie collapses and you make room for truth. Otherwise, the game of denial, dissociation, projection, externalization literally runs the whole world. Now, how can you tell whether that's true for you or not? Well, there's an easy marker. Are you still capable of hostility or fear? Every time your mind uses hostility or fear to produce your perceptual construct, your mind is using corrupt data. It's telling you a lie, and you're in blockage of truth. And when you're in blockage of truth, you can't get to the part of your mind that you need to heal because you've dissociated from it. Forgiveness restores the access to that part of the mind. And when you bring it forward in the presence of active love, the dissolution of the lie begins. And you get to live in a totally different world. The whole game changes. So hopefully that makes sense. It's a pretty big chunk of information. And I suspect that if I were in your hometown right now and I were up on the platform at your local library and you were in the audience or your local prison or your local church or your local university, whatever, if I were on the platform and I came down off the platform having just said what I said, I suspect that every person listening would come over to me and say, Michael, well, what about? And that's what we want right now, is your what about question. Well, wait a minute, how does this work? And so if you're out there in listener land, and what I've said makes sense or doesn't make sense or needs refinement, push one. Let's have a conversation about it. Our call-in number, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show directly on your phone. And then if you push one, we'll be having a conversation. So if you're out there in listener land, how can I support you? What's on your mind? Michelle, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, quiet today. Me and Bob in the chat room, I think he's from Australia, right? Or, yeah.
Yes. Yep. Yep, Bob's in up over or down under, depending which perceptual construct you go with.
Mm-hmm.
I have a map where Australia is at the top of the world. It's all perspective. It's all perception.
Yeah, that is. I saw a map the other day sideways, and I could, you know, feel the resistance. That isn't the way it's supposed to be.
Exactly. Yeah, it's interesting how, and you know, there's this thing about, you know, premature commitment, cognitive commitment. And when we decide something is a certain way, that they've shown it takes a whole lot more brain power, a whole lot more energy moving through the system to withdraw from a lie and embrace the truth than it took to embrace the truth in the first place. Once the mind's made a commitment to it, it takes a lot of energy to undo, to let loose of that commitment. And that's where when they said to Yeshua, well, how many times do we need to forgive? Is seven times enough? And in Aramaic, he said, no, 77 times 70. An infinite number of times till you're complete with that issue is how much you're going to have to forgive. And, of course, forgiveness meaning nothing to do with letting people off the hook. but rather the tool with which you collapse your perceptual constructs based in the lie, and you start to get access to truth. And if you haven't used that tool yet, we invite you to go to our website, whyagain.org. And in the upper left-hand corner, you'll see the very tippy top of the page, the word start here. Click the start here button, and that will walk you through the whole forgiveness process. And as you engage in that, you can actually fill out the worksheet right there on the website, and or you can download the worksheets, print them out from your own printer, and you'll fill them out by hand. You can also go to your phone's app store and type in the words Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, all one word, Heartland, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. If you type that into your app store, whether you've got an Android or an iPhone, then you'll be looking at the world's only, at least in my awareness at this point, the world's only forgiveness app. Step by step, here's how you undo what never belonged in your mind. And the technology of it is absolutely genius. How this man 2,000 years ago was able to bring this forward to the world, I don't know, but I, for one, am definitely very relieved and very appreciative of the fact that he did. So you can do the worksheet process right there on the phone. The app is set up so it has an absolute minimum of permissions to operate. It actually only needs one permission, and that's permission to use the internet. That's all it needs. We don't have a desire to have your, you know, the control of your camera, send text, or make phone calls, or access to your database, your contacts. All it needs is to use the internet. And then you can do the actual forgiveness process step by step right there on your phone. It defaults and just automatically goes through the questions. And when you get to the end of it, if you decide you want to print it, you can print and save a PDF of the worksheet, each one you do. Then it's going to ask for permission to use your hard drive to be able to store that information. But otherwise, there are no other permissions required. We purposely set the app up so you can have confidence that whatever you told it is private, it's yours, doesn't belong to or get seen by anybody but you. So it's a freebie. Just download it from your app store and you'll be rock and roll. Beyond that, how can we support you? What's on your mind? Is there something that you need some assistance with any of the tools? Is there something that we can do to clarify any of the tools? Or support you with any of the logic and reason behind why and how the tools work? And there are a whole raft of tools. I don't even know what. I haven't sat down and counted how many different worksheets there are on the website, a couple dozen at least. Each one is how you do this particular workshop. So whether it's doing why is this happening to me again, or healing through relationships, or communication to hear what I think I said, or purpose, personal power, and commitment, and power to him. Each workshop has its own working, or most of the workshops do. And they're available on our website, see? And the instructions are there to put you to work. So if that leaves you with any questions, now's the time to push one and let's have a conversation. You're down to about 11 minutes, 10 minutes maybe. And if you think you might have another question for us, if you're out there, it would be sweet to hear your voice and assist you with that thought or that question. And or anybody that's out there in listener land, how can we support you? On your mind. By the way, Michelle, a kind of a
a neat thing that I ran into just the other day. You know, you've heard me say for years that there are only two places in the world
that
I found. Hi there.
I was talking on my mute. I apologize. 314 is on the air.
Oh, great. Okay. Let's say hello to 314.
Hello, Michael.
Hey, Doug. How are you, sir?
Good.
Welcome. How's our 2 days of processing for the nuclear world?
I couldn't understand what you said, but your mic keeps slipping, Michael. It was slipped a minute ago again. But
my apologies. Okay, thank you. I was just asking how things were unfolding from our 2 days of intense conversation last week. I thought that was great conversation.
Yeah, I don't think I have enough resolution about all that to address it right now, but I wanted to talk about what you are, you know, in the 10 minutes we have and whatever. You know, this is a pretty big topic there, but I'm curious about just understanding the shift that you're making, you have made some time ago that I'm barely catching up to, about the terminology of blockage of personal error, which I frequently use. And so
use
what
blockage of personal error?
There, blockage of personal error, yeah.
Okay.
That
you were
what,
there in the early days when that's how we were teaching it in Laws of Living back 25 years ago.
That's where I got it. So
yep.
So now hearing you say that it means it should better be said blockage of truth, and I'm hearing I'm asking you to help me confirm that what that means is blockage
sure.
of the truth that blockage of the truth that you are actually generating the image in your mind that someone else is the cause of your problem. That's what you're blocking.
You're not blocking that. No.
What are you blocking?
You're not blocking. So what's happening is, when we live in denial, we hide something from ourselves. What we hide
right.
is the truth.
Which
so
is the...
when I hide...
Oh, all right. Go ahead. Sorry, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
When I hide the truth from myself, i.e., gee, I've been through this particular painful reality 87 different times with 42 different people, I'm the only one that was there, therefore it must be mine and I must be responsible. That would be the logical truth of it. But when I say you made me mad, I caused my mind to create an hallucination, literally to generate a perceptual construct where I see a picture of you being the problem in my life. So I have instructed my mind to tell me a lie. My mind tells me the lie. You're the problem in my life. I see my error, the belief that you're the problem in my life, very clearly. But the insight that came that was transformed that all for me was, yes, I see the lie, and I believe it. I call my lie truth. So I'm seeing my error, that you're the problem in my life, but I call that the truth. And by filling that 9-bit slot in my conscious awareness with a lie, I inhibit the ability of my mind to show me the truth. So I'm now, by telling myself a lie and calling my lie the truth, I live in blockage of truth rather than blockage of personal error. The person who's in error sees their error totally, completely, clearly, 100%. But they call their error the truth. And now by holding on to that error and calling it truth, their mind can't show them the truth. So they're in blockage of truth. Does that make sense?
Right. And the truth that they're in blockage of, yes, it does. And the truth that they're in blockage of is that in fact, that problem was already alive in their life before that person showed up, and that therefore it is actually a problem that exists inside of them due to hidden content or content they're hiding from themselves and creating an image of that other person out of, right?
You got it. Precisely. That's exactly what happens.
Okay. So that,
and so we used to, in Laws of Living, we used to call that blockage of personal error. But then, and it's probably 15 years ago now that it was teaching a Laws of Living class at Heartland. I was like, wait a minute. No. This isn't, this person is seeing their error perfectly. The problem is they're calling their error the truth. And now there's no room for the truth to get in. As long as I believe and I have documentation from my mind that you're the problem in my life, I'll never see that I'm the one with the problem.
Right. That's great. Yeah, I see that now. Okay, that's much better. I mean, I wanted to just clean that up, and I knew that by talking to you about it, it would help, and also getting more clear about what the truth is that they're hiding from themselves or blocking from themselves, which is the fact that they had it before and that the image that they're hiding content from them, it's creating an image that the fault is, or the blame belongs to the other party. And it would include the truth of whatever that hidden dissociated content is as well, that's in them, right?
Exactly.
The fact that that's...
Exactly.
Okay. All right. That's
so once
to,
they can... And where the forgiveness piece comes in is once they realize that whole process is being driven by a goal. Let's say a typical example would be, well, you know, when I was a kid, my power person always told me that I was the guilty one. It was always my fault and I was to blame. And there's so much hurt and pain and rejection and sadness and grief and rage around being to blame that I never want to be to blame again in my life. Therefore, if there's something wrong, I'm going to make sure that I instruct my mind to show me that someone else is the one who's wrong here. And the deep regurgitating pain, the why is this happening to me again pain behind this dynamic is exactly what we need to heal. But because we keep telling ourselves a lie, we keep it hidden.
Right.
So I'm now cut off from the very part of my mind that I need to surface and heal by getting stuck in the lie.
And the goal can be and often is very, very much buried. And, you know, there are a lot of different goals that can end up precipitating this process.
Yes. And a really important thing is develop the skill of being able to spot what your real goal is. Somebody can say, well, you know, I just want them to care for me. But underneath the caring is what I want is to be safe. And if they never come to dealing with the goal of I want to be safe, oh, I just want them to care for me. I want them to take care of me. I want them to love me. I want them to give me money. I want them to take care of all of my needs. And all those goals can be canceled. It'll be moving in the direction, but that person won't access that dissociated content in their mind until they cancel the goal to be safe. And then that file will open in the mind and they'll have access to the pained content around being safe, and by bringing that forward in the presence of love, it will dissolve and be released.
Right, and it takes some skill and practice sometimes to be able to get to the goal that's under the apparent goal.
It is a practice for sure. Yep.
All right, yep. I think that'll help. I find it interesting that I didn't hear you make that correction until now, and you made it 15 years ago. So,
yeah, that was a major, that summer was a major change in Laws of Living to see that piece of information and get it was, and I've many times lamented that Dan McDougald wasn't alive to share that insight with me because, you know, the original blockage of truth idea came from Dan. And I have lamented many times that he would have been so excited to see that piece. And it's a major, major piece of the puzzle. And we're down to the last few seconds, so I'm going to just say thank you, Doug, for calling in and helping to clarify that again. And everybody, create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you.